Good morning. This is the regular meeting of the Rancho Murrieta Community Services District's Improvements Committee for May 7th. We are called to order. Agenda item, improvement staff report, Loomis and Associates CIP study presentation. Did you have anything to say?
I just got a few things real quick.
Okay.
And then we can turn it over to Loomis. I just want to, we'll go over the SB 170. We are having continual communication problems with our Rio Oso tank to the water treatment plant. It's an AT&T phone line that keeps going out. It's not a phone, it's a communication line. And it keeps going out, and whenever it goes out, it's about an hour on the phone to get a service ticket, and then it's about 5-6 days before they'll come out and fix it. And during that time, we have no communication with the Rio Oso tank. One of the things that I wanted to bring to the committee is the potential of looking into radio control from the tanks instead of the underground communication cable. This was talked about before with Paul when he was here, and I don't know if it's ever been brought to the committee, but I just have Jeremy, who's our electrician guy. He did just an estimate, and it came in a lot more than what I thought. So this will be something that will have to be talked about, and it might have to get put off till not next fiscal year, but 25-26 CIP project. We might have to limp along as long as possible. But I got a quote from him to do the radio for both tanks, and it comes in at about $139,000.
Wow.
And so that was a lot more than what I thought. So obviously it would have to go out to bid and other things, and because of the cost, and since we've already completed our CIP wish list for this year, unless it becomes an emergency situation, it might be something that we have to wait till last year. He did break down, like, if we just wanted to do the Rio Oso tank, that's $77,000 plus installation, so about $85,000. So if we wanted to break it down. But I wanted to just start the conversation about it now, that way, because right now we still don't have correct information from that tank being read. And with grading starting on the developments over by Escuela, they're going to estimate taking out about 250,000 gallons of potable water a day, and half of that's coming out of Rio Oso tank. And so we have to get accurate communication so we know what's going on with that tank.
Is there a manual? Can we check it manually?
The tank itself, the site itself, has its own PLC, so that's the only thing that's keeping us from having to man it 24 hours a day, because it's got its own on-site PLC that controls the opening and the closing of the valve, and it does have so, and it does give the height in the tank there. So we will be checking that multiple times a day, especially in the morning time when the irrigation is happening. That's when our biggest potential issues are going to be. So I will be, I've instructed staff that we will be doing that. But I just wanted to get the conversation started on this need that we're going to have.
Okay, I guess those are our two options. Is that line or the radio?
That's my understanding at this point. I can talk, because that's what all was brought up. I can speak with Jeremy to see if there's other options, but unless we want to direct bury a line ourselves, I think radio communication is what's going to be needed. I don't know if there could be other options out there. I will talk with him, but I know that was the one that's always been discussed.
Okay. Did you want to do we want to finish these other items and come back to Loomis, or what do you want to do?
I can go over the SB 170 projects real quick if you'd like the update.
Okay.
The water treatment hypochlorite conversion, that's still at 100% design. We will be at the CIP. When they go at the finance committee, they'll be bringing our CIP list, and the cost for that conversion will be part of that. I think it was like $508,000 for that work to be done. The recycled water here at the wastewater plant, I've asked, because of the cost for the whole project is it's about $3 million, I've asked them to give me a quote of what it would cost to just do the hypo conversion itself, not the tanks, not the contact chambers, to expand our capability. And that came out to, that's estimated about $1,050,000. So that will be being brought forward as a cost. Obviously, it's going to be a board decision what direction we go after the Granley's project. I just want to make sure I have figures for you guys so you can make your decisions on. The Granley's project, we just got the contract back from NMI. I'm assuming the next step is for us to review it and sign it, and then once that's done, we'll move forward on pre-construction meetings when they want to start. My presumption is, they're going to start. They'll start after our pumping season, which of course ends at the end of this month anyway. So. But that's where we're at on our SB 170 projects.
If they wanted to put this thing off till August, because it'll be the river will be drier then, do we have any objection to that?
The only thing that I see is providing water to the CIA ditch. A part of the plans was for them to have a rain for rent style pump to pump from there into the CIA ditch. I don't have any issues with it happening. I think one of the things that we're going to have to do is coordinate with the ranchers to see what their water needs are going to be. Because I know that depending on how long that the actual four bay will be closed. I know from previous experiences when we were doing the CIA ditch upgrade that if they fill up their lakes, they can have 3 or 4 days worth of irrigation built up. So it's more of a what are the needs going to be, and is it going to harm downstream having the ditch blocked off?
Yeah,
I know there was.
I just from my own experience. In fact, I've got a job down at Wilton, Dillard Road over the river, and we can't start till August because that's the prime time to get in there when it's driest. So I'm just anticipating that the contractor is going to want to put this off until it's at its driest.
So what my thought is, once the contract is signed on our side and given back to them, I'll touch bases with them so we can have a pre-construction meeting to set dates, look at stuff that has to be done. Because I don't know, but I still think environmental and all that stuff has to be done. I'm not 100% sure. But once everything's signed, I will get in touch with him to get some further dates. So we'll know a little bit better what's going on.
Okay. Wooden Bridge transfer is the only other item on the agenda. Do we?
I don't have that.
Mr. Ramos sent over the title, the transfer documents, and the title report.
You know, I looked through it all, and I'm, you know, how long this has taken to get this done. In a nutshell, let's move it on.
So I will send it over to RMA for approval, and then it'll either be on this month's board meeting, but probably in June, because you're going to want to look at it.
Yep. Okay, very good. So we are back to the CIP study.
Yeah.
What topic do you want to start with?
Go ahead and go to that exhibit okay. There.
Okay.
So in fall of last year, Loomis contracted with RMCSD to provide capital improvement planning assistance and a water and sewer rate study. After we had entered into contract, we did a multi-day field investigation with Travis, myself, and Mara Kuroga, our senior engineer, who's on the call today. We reviewed all of the district's vertical assets and then also the horizontal assets on a qualitative basis. We visited all of the reservoirs in Rancho Marietta and sewer lift stations, storm drain pump stations, the water treatment plant. We talked to Travis a lot about the challenges that the district faces with the aging infrastructure and kind of got a really good feel in person for all of the district's facilities. And then we spent some time going through all of the district's GIS records and worked with Travis to determine dates of installation for all the water and sewer systems. And we developed an asset inventory for the district that identifies all of the water and sewer pipes that you have and what the dates of installation were and pipe material, etc. From there, after we developed that inventory, we used the American Water Works Association recommendations for effective useful life of the infrastructure and identified a cost to replace the district system at the end of its effective useful life. So included in your board packet is a summary. The first summary sheet is all of the assets, water and sewer combined. And then there are two separate breakdowns for water only and sewer only. Per the district's request, we had separated the recommended improvements into five-year increments. So the first section that you see under the purple heading is all of the infrastructure that reaches its end of useful life in the next 5 years. And then we identify several capital improvement projects that we feel are needed based on remaining useful life and the visual condition assessment that we completed with Travis. Also included in the asset inventory is a listing of all of the district's maintenance vehicles. Michael and Travis had asked us to include that, so we took the current mileage of district vehicles and estimated miles per year and determined when those vehicles may need to be replaced for inclusion in the CIP as well. Several weeks ago, we had a conversation with Michael and Travis about the inclusion of dam maintenance and rehabilitation recommendations as well, because your reservoirs are critical to your water system. Michael had felt that it was appropriate to include those dam recommendations also. So our dam engineer in our Reno office took a look at the most recent 2024 dam safety inspection reports and provided some recommendations for maintenance activities that we feel are going to lessen issues in the future. And then we also recommend a number of dam rehabilitation projects within the life of the 20-year CIP. We had sent a technical memo to Travis this past Friday that identifies both all of the annual maintenance activities as well as the recommended projects in the next 20 years. So the number on our summary sheet can be scary, and it's not necessarily an accurate representation of what the district must do to keep their systems in service. It's really a representation of what it would cost to replace the pipes at the end of their effective useful life. So no districts in California have the funds available to perform all of all projects at the end of useful life. Typically, pipes can last a lot longer than what the AWWA recommends. Sometimes they fail earlier. So really, this is just like a rough estimate of what you would be looking at if you're going to follow the AWWA's recommendations. But there's some things that we could do to kind of centralize or identify problem areas within the district to kind of prioritize projects that are going to be more necessary than just a wholesale, okay, we're going to replace everything in 0 to 5 years. So Travis and I have talked a little bit about identifying regions of the system that experience pipe breaks frequently or valve issues. So we can work with the district to kind of refine what's represented here in the spreadsheets and reduce the total costs that it's going to take to replace the district's assets. So it's really about managing your risk, because when you have a big pipe break and houses are out of service, there's cost to execute a contractor on an emergency basis. And so if you try to get ahead of these things and install new pipes before they fail, there's some cost efficiencies there. But we also recognize that you don't want to just go out and replace all your entire system because the EPA says that it might fail in the coming year. So that's something that we can work through. And then also on our team is Catherine Hansford. She's a renowned water and sewer rate study expert. She helps a lot of districts throughout California and Nevada with these types of rate studies. And she can provide guidance to the board on methods of funding all of this infrastructure, potential financing opportunities, and just overall management of the CIP and prioritization of key projects that are going to be more important than others. So she's not here today, but she'll be available next Wednesday to kind of walk the board through that and talk about how agencies handle these massive replacement costs that aren't currently fundable. The last thing I want to kind of highlight is the spreadsheets that we had provided last week, at the end of last week, for inclusion. These provide an analysis of the dam safety inspection reports and then identification of key maintenance activities. So I think to date we have not assessed the cost of the maintenance activities or the rehabilitations for inclusion in the CIP. We're currently working on that, but we just haven't had enough time to add that. So the number that you see on this summary sheet will increase based on those dam rehabilitation recommendations. And it's important to note the rehabilitation recommendations are just based on dam safety inspection reports, and we don't have any geotechnical analysis or, you know, detailed investigations that would really guide us in developing, like, a good, you know, higher level estimate. So. That's about all I...
Travis, questions, comments?
So, some of the things that we're doing in to be a little bit more proactive is we are doing water line inspections. It's part of a continuing CIP project that we're doing on a yearly basis where we camera the water. We started with the sewer last year, and we're going to start with water to kind of just get a camera picture of what our water, what our mains look like, to give us an idea, to work in conjunction with Loomis as to, you know, to see what the pipes look like from the inside. Obviously, we're not going to do the whole district in one shot. We're doing unit by unit, starting on the north. We're doing that to try to be proactive so we can identify these, because 99% of our water leaks are just service lines. They're not main breaks. But when we do have them, they're big. As you know, we had the one right there on Lago and Para that, you know, basically we had to call in a contractor to help us out. And that had water off to all those homes for the whole day. So we are trying to be a little proactive in identifying some spots. I think our, in my opinion, obviously the pressure zone is going to be a little bit more than the gravity zone because ergo pressure. And so I don't know where they're starting, which unit they're going to start on this inspection, but my thought is that we would start in the pressure zone to it's either that or start in unit one, because those are the oldest pipes. So district is starting to be a little proactive in that instance.
Do we own the cameras, or is this a...
No. This is going to be an outside agency, because the only camera we have is sewer. But what this study does is not only it looks at it and videotapes it gives it a NASCO rating and a whole bunch of different things that they look at the pipe. So it's a little bit more in depth than just running the camera through there. And then also what we do is we also take that video, take that information, and we put it on our GIS system. So that way it's available in that. Last year's sewer stuff was put on the GIS and identified some issues. So I'm curious to see what it's going to do for the water. That'll be an outside agency doing that.
So I'm going to try and understand the basics of the study. The two pages with the summary just summarize the 50 pages behind it.
Yeah.
So all of these are individual pieces of pipe, and here is in these two pages is the total of those.
Well, the inventory includes all of the district's assets, and the summary pages only include the improvements within the 20 years CIP. So the pipes that are newer than...
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, that makes sense. But so... So all of our pipes are shown as PVC on the summary sheets. Is that true?
There's some asbestos concrete pipe But the majority of this district system is PVC.
Isn't the reinforced concrete pipe underneath the streets?
Ron would be more in tune with that, but I know that I'd have to verify with Ron as to what is actually there, but it's my understanding that we do have quite a bit of PVC under the ground. But I can also look at my annual report, because Ron breaks down what all we have underground in the annual report.
So for sewer, it would probably be asbestos. For water, there might be some welded steel pipe or something somewhere. And the unit prices for current cost of replacement, unit cost, 2-inch PVC, $200 a foot, 18-inch PVC, $450 a foot. Does that come from a database somewhere that's used universally?
Yeah, it's based on our engineering best judgment, based on projects that we've done in the area, and it includes the cost of installation and also the soft cost of designing the project. So
yeah,
that's why it looks higher than what
well,
you
see. I'm not sure that it looks high to me, because
pipe's expensive.
Well, it's different if it's buried 5 feet versus the one we found that was buried. How deep was that? We had to do shoring just to get to
feet.
It.
Yeah.
It was 18 feet. So, you know, $450 a foot, that was probably $4,000 a foot, right, just to replace 20 feet. So, I guess I'm wondering if there's a way to figure out how much of that stuff that's buried deep and give it a different unit price than the typical, you know, mm-hmm. pipe that is where it should be. So in the big picture, you haven't given us what you think the cost for the maintenance of the dams is, and I see it in a lot of spots here, there's pending.
Mm-hmm. And then there's a full printout that was on your table there this morning. That's the dam report.
This is?
Those are the spreadsheets associated with the dam report. But that printout, you have them in your printout, only they're little.
Yeah, the back of this.
Yeah, right. So that's all the dam information.
And does that get us costs?
That does not include costs.
So where I'm going with this is, are all the costs pending and the dam and all that going to be ready by next Wednesday to show to the board?
Yes, the dam recommendations, we're going to have those costed out by the end of the day tomorrow.
Okay.
And then the pending items that in the summary table were, there's a couple that we're still evaluating. I could work with Travis to get bid tabs recently in Rancho Marietta to try to flesh out a couple of those. But for the most part, our asset inventory is complete.
Okay. So the pending and the dam costs will be part of the report in front of the full board.
Mr. Tango, just so you know, we did add the dam thing to her at last minute. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know.
Well, I was going with this is if you need more time, there's the Wednesday is not a magic day.
The next board meeting is Tuesday.
If we'd I think it's more important to get this right than to hit that date. If you need for all this pending stuff and whatnot.
So the other important thing I didn't touch on is the CIP is just based on the district's existing assets, and we're already contemplating an update in July once the integrated water master plan work is done, because this doesn't include any of the recommended projects for that effort. So they're going to come back with, you know, additional projects that need to be funded by the water and sewer rate study. And so maybe if we do go to the board next Wednesday, we need to stress that it is a draft, and it is going to be, we're not going to proceed with the rate study or Catherine Hansford's effort until after the integrated water master plan is complete, and we can also add those additional projects.
All right.
So even if we pushed it to June, it would still just be a draft.
Can I ask a question? Because I'm coming late to the party on this. Is there a reason why we can't wait till after the integrated water master plan has been completed and discussed before we have her bring this to the board? That way we only, instead of having her happen to come next week and then in 2 months or whatever, is there a reason why we're presenting this now and not waiting for the complete report?
I don't believe there is, but what you said about it being a draft, and I have multiple questions, board members might have multiple questions, it might be good, as you say, to present it as a draft and get everybody's questions out of the way so that when the final is presented to us, that we've ironed out some of the details of it so that we can get down to the number.
Yeah.
The number, which $10 million a year isn't going to happen, like you said. It's a big number. I don't know what... Then we have to be talking about what percentage of that is reasonable and can we attain.
I got a text. Director Butler wanted this information as part of the integrated water master plan effort, as you know, knowledge to know before a vote is taken. That's my understanding based on a text that I just got. So that just answers my question, mm-hmm. as to why we're doing it, you know, now. So maybe it is pertinent to present something at this point.
Yeah, I don't see a reason for not presenting it as a draft that people can look at, question, and you can revise if there's something we see that needs to be changed.
One question.
Sure.
You could forego the form.
This one time. Based on
these. I don't know. That's setting a precedent. We don't want to do that.
I was just curious.
John Merchant.
John Merchant.
Yeah.
In your first two sections, the overall value number looks like it's about somewhere in the neighborhood of $45 million. And those are, and you've identified them correctly in the colors, they're obviously the oldest, and in some cases, like with the village, the most problematic areas that we have. How do you go about the process of assessing, whether it be a percentage or, like Randy was saying, how do we evaluate, particularly in those two sections, which are definitely the oldest infrastructure we have, How do we hang a reserve number on that $45 million? Is it a different equation than it would be looking out, for example, at Unit 3 and Unit 4, where you get into the blue areas and then over to the fairways where it's much, much newer?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way that you assess that that's different for the upfront oldest stuff versus the stuff on the back end?
A large percentage of the district's assets are currently past their useful life. So in year 0 to 5, you see that inflated cost because
right.
it's not just what's aging out in the first 5 years. It's everything that's already past its
So, like, across the whole water sewer, for example, is there, what do you consider to be, is it an average useful life? Is that a number you're working with? Or are you looking at it piece by piece? Or how do you do that?
Generally, it's 55 years for, that's okay. The American Water Works Association's estimate for water and sewer pipes. That's the age at which things start breaking and need to be replaced. And so that $108 million number that you see up there is highly dependent on that effective useful life, because any small change in that number really sways the overall total. So this effort is highly dependent on a number of assumptions that we've made that can be, you know, updated as we receive more information from the district on the history of pipe replacements and things like
that. So using that 55 years, though, what I'm trying to get at, looking realistically at that first $45 million bucks, is that more heavily weighted? You know, I can tell you just from a layman's interpretation, we know that that stuff is 1972, 73 over there, beginning in the village, and we know the stuff in Unit 1 is 75. I'm on the end of the orange, and I'm from 1979.
Yeah.
So would you, out of that $45 million, I don't want to hold you to this, but I'm just trying to understand it. Out of that $45 million, that's in that front end, is there a way you hang your hat on a number? I'm not holding you to a number, but do you say, well, God, we got a budget for at least $20 million of that because it's 55, 60 years old. Does that make sense, what I'm asking?
Yeah, I think maybe we would benefit from a separate total for all of the assets that are, like, say, 10 years past their useful life, and we could consider those in a separate category. Like, hey, we've told you, like, this is what we really think needs to be done the first 0 to 5 years, but let's take another look at, you know, a fraction of that number that is just everything that is 10 years past its useful life.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Because, like Randy says, I don't know, once you get past the $45 million, I don't even know how you're dealing with it anyway. I don't know, other than a very long, very expensive bond, I don't know how you get through that. But the other thing was, and I had mentioned this, you know, in all that research I did on the reservoirs, I came across in a few instances where Clementia was noted to be at a higher level than it's rated for at the Bureau of Dam Safety. Not by much, but by 100 acre feet, and it magnifies a little bit if you put the flashboards in. And I was just wondering if there's any plan, in light of the Integrated Water Master Plan and what you're doing, to do the bathymetrics on that reservoir like we did on Chesboro and Calero?
To the best of my knowledge, that has not been scheduled. I'd have to talk with Michael, because Michael was working with them. To the best of my knowledge, that has not been scheduled at this point. I don't know if Michael had to clear those studies with the board or the improvements committee. So to my best answer I can give you is I don't know.
Yeah, there were five different numbers used at five different times as to what the actual volume of Lake Clementia really is. And it's been implemented in various reports and various things that were done. I know that when they issued the license, they actually lowered the level of the license to correspond from what the license was originally put in, which was about 1,250 acre feet. They lowered it down, and I found a note on some of the original documents that said that they did that because the dam wouldn't hold 1,250, it held 1,150. But and then when you get to the 1,150 number, you don't see that again. You see 900, 850, depending on what document you're looking at. So nobody really knows. I think it might. My best guess would be it's actually lower, but I don't know the answer. I can't find the real answer.
And so the best that I can do would be I can, when Michael comes back, I can ask him, and then based on direction from Mimi or the board,
yeah,
we can proceed with that.
Yeah. Okay. So, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
So back to the nuts and bolts of this study. When you get to the sewer treatment plant, it's broken out into all the parts and pieces and pumps and filters, and then the building is separate.
Mm-hmm.
Or I forget where I saw the building. Wastewater treatment building, $875,000. But when you talk about the water treatment plant, it looks like it's just all shoved into one line item, water treatment plant building. Is that, am I reading this right or am I missing something? $8,226,500. And that, so that can't be just for the building. That's got to be the building and everything, all of the equipment.
Yeah, so we've used an estimated cost per square foot for the replacement cost for all of the buildings. That particular building was constructed in 1978, and based on the square footage we've received from Travis, that's how we arrived at that rough estimated replacement cost. And that all of the equipment is broken out separately, so it's not.
Where do I find that, the equipment for the? Maybe I missed it.
So under the RMCSD vertical inventory, I believe we're on page 2 of 3.
Okay.
Are we on 1 of 3 or 2 of 3?
We were at 2 of 3. He was asking about the $8.2 million for the water treatment plant building replacement year in 2039. Yeah. That cost is based on a cost per square foot, and the square footage of the building that we.
Does it include the equipment in the building?
It does not.
And so where would I find all of that? I'm specific. My brain goes to those cartridges and filters that are so expensive.
Yeah, my brain goes to the $8 million worth of panels that are in the accelerator.
Right.
Yeah, the new water treatment plant is relatively new, and so it's outside of the scope of our 20-year CIP, so we didn't have to cost any of that out for replacement, because all this is identifying costs for over the next 20 years for inclusion in the rate study.
So
that brings up the question that Michael had, which is when we replace those filters, is that part of capital improvements or is it part of operating expenses? And is all the other equipment good for 20 years?
The only thing that, because like the membranes, they say they have a 10-year life cycle, the membrane modules. Obviously, with our current issues we have, we're not quite meeting that. We're close. We're about 8 years. But everything else, I would agree that we're, 20, 25-year life cycle, because, obviously,
what about the older part of the plant?
The older part, which is plant 2, we have a CIP request to replace that whole filter room because of issues that we're having there. We've recently replaced all the mechanics inside the set basins. So you really just have a couple of pumps and motors, but your big thing is the filter room, not counting the building itself. But we're asking for this year for $175,000 to replace all the media, do some repairs and stuff. But once that's done, I mean, that media hasn't been replaced since I've been here, and that's going on 15 years. So we know the media and stuff will last a long time. So.
Okay, so I get it. We're what's in there is good for at least 20 years.
Yeah.
So then it really comes down to are the membranes capital improvements or operating costs, and I'm not smart enough to know the answer.
I think that might be something that Mark would be.
I was just going to say that
would be a little bit more experienced.
That's something that he should take a look at and see if it should be in here or it's a separate entity. Because if it's part of operating costs, it has to be considered in the.
You guys can give me another $20 million and we can upgrade the plant a little bit more better if you want.
Oh, I left my wallet out in the car, sir. Okay, I get that. I think that's all the questions I had.
Can I revisit? Are we gonna have her come back up next week or on June 5th? So I can get. I'm working on the agenda now.
I think all of the parts and pieces are here, and as long as it's presented as a draft, just for questions, won't be an action item, just a discussion item. I think that would be beneficial for everyone to take a look at this and be able to digest it and understand it and come up with.
I have this on the agenda to start before the IWMP. Let me see. But you can ask me to change that. So I have the IWMP first and then her.
Okay.
Good? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If that's okay, I don't think.
Yeah, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Move one back or forward, whichever.
I definitely want to listen to their whole presentation.
Okay, there you go.
It doesn't matter.
We're good.
And then I'm planning on them starting right at 5.
Okay.
This idea of the deeper pipes that cost us so much, I really would like to somehow make it a part of this. Doesn't our system know what percentage of the pipes are buried? No.
No, I mean, when we did that valve replacement there on yeah, thank you. We actually thought that was only 8 feet deep, and so it was what. And then once we got the valve, because we didn't know there was an extender on the valve. So when we put the key down in there to turn it, and then it wouldn't turn, and then we looked, and it was like, oh, that's an extender. That's when we found out how deep it was. And so
we have no way of knowing.
So
how about this? In 20, we're looking out 20 years. The oldest stuff, the unit one, and across the street. Any idea of is a lot. Do we have an idea if any of that is buried deep or?
I can talk with Ron to find out. But if that repair that was on Lago is any indication, that was only like 6 feet deep. So obviously we have hills and stuff. What I can do is I can talk with Ron. The utility supervisor to see if he's got an idea of what we're looking at based on repairs and stuff, because I know that when we do the, when we do like the service line repairs, I haven't heard them, or we haven't had to call in for a longer reach excavator, and I know that our backhoe won't reach no more than 8 feet down. So, based on that information, I don't think it's that deep. I mean, that's that excavator went right there in De La Cruz. That was the first time we've had to, that I've seen, that we've had to call in somebody for a longer reach. But what I can do is I can see if Ron can give me some confirmation on that.
Yeah, if we're confident that the older stuff is where it's supposed to be, I guess I'm good with it. Okay, so Wednesday you'll have you'll bring this with all of the pending items filled in, and will you summarize the dam costs in this summary sheet and add it into the totals?
Yes.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. We covered everything else. I just have one more item, Travis. We got a email from Dale Shell at Marietta Village.
Correct.
Can you give me the
yes,
higher up view of what's going on with that?
Yes, I could. I know that Mark was handling the situation. I can give you the background.
Yes.
So he has a pipe. There, a pipe that broke is a 2-inch service line that is before his meter. Last year, it was our water policy was updated that the smaller lines were not district responsibility. We have the mains, the 6-8 inch lines. So when he came in and spoke to me, this was before I knew the code, because they had, I know Mimi and Michael had got together and discussed this in length, and they sent an email. And then they sent an email and all of this stuff to the current manager at the village. And so when he had the pipe break before, the district did the repair. He said it was about 10 years ago. It's a belief that pipe is, like I said, it's before his meter. It's on his property. It is before his meter, and it's a belief that it is potentially the HOA's responsibility. I know Mark has attempted to contact him several times and just gotten his voicemail. I don't know if he's left a voicemail or not. We actually went over there to try to talk to the new manager over there, and he wasn't available. And I know Mark said he just recently got a hold of him. And so the email that he sent, Mark said that he would be contacting him to close the loop on it. It's just a of who does this belong to conversation.
So the controversy is it's before the meter, but it's
off of our, it's a 2-inch,
but it's out of our easement.
Correct. And so that's where the and I think it was, well, you guys repaired it before. And you know, a lot of those pipes that are actually on the resident's property, they are actually under the mobile home, and it's actually a safety issue.
Before the meter?
That I don't know. Ron is just saying that a lot of them are under the homes. But just speaking on this one, I know the line is in front, is before his meter. So the question is, well, per the district's water code, it's not our main due to the size.
Okay, got it. Sounds like we're working on it. We're a services district. So
I got Mimi calling in. She might have something on it.
Okay.
Let me answer the call real quick. And it's not showing up on my. Let me call her real quick. He's not here. Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, I will do that. No problem. Yeah. Mark's listening in. Can you get him in? He can give you a more better update.
Okay.
You're on the line, Mark.
You're on speaker. Hey, everybody. How's it going?
Good. How are you, Mark?
Wow.
I'm doing great. So I just want to make sure that the board knows we are definitely working on a response for Mr. Shell. I believe the leak came to the district's attention back on April 23rd, and Ron went out and observed the leak out at the Villages. And I can't recall, and I have a text in to Ron, because I'm going to reply to Mr. Shell today. I was trying to pull a lot of information together and actually try to help him with some additional information, because I think we're in a situation now where he's received a response twice from the district that the line that's leaking is not a district line and there's nothing we can do for him. So I was trying to advance the conversation with some new information rather than just continue to go back and forth on it's not the district's and you should fix it anyway, and it's not the district's and you should fix it anyway. So I believe that he talked to Ron, or Ron at least observed it on the 23rd. And then Travis actually sent him a very informative email on the 24th of April that included a letter that was sent to the HOA president of the Villages, Tracy, at the time, that basically spelled out district code. I think it's code section 3.02 that these lateral lines coming off the water mains are not district property, and the district is not going to fix them or not supposed to fix them per code going forward. So, and then Travis also in his email referenced that specific district code section. And I think last week Mr. Shell came in to the district office, and I think he was pretty animated and wanted a meeting on the spot, and we were in the middle of some stuff, and we told him we would try to set something up with him later. So in that interim period, we've been trying to get some new information or see if there's anything we can do. I actually have a response pretty much finished for him today, and it's got a map of his property in the Villages. It's got the main district 6-inch line highlighted. It's got where the valve is, and then it's got that private line, lateral line going in through Mr. Shell's property there, and then also to some other properties adjacent to his. And again, the response is going to just be what the district code is, which that's a private line, and that's not something that the district is supposed to get involved with or do anything with. I did connect with yesterday. This is the individual I've been trying to get a hold of the last couple of days. Francisco, the new HOA president over at the Villages, just to talk to him about it. And he actually informed me that two of the Village HOA board members have also talked to Mr. Shell about this leak. So I just want to, you know, I understand, and I fully believe, you know, we are a services district and we need to respond to our ratepayers and provide them good information. I just want to make sure that the board knows that that's actually what we've been doing. We've been trying to compile as much data on this as possible. and there have been responses to Mr. Schell. I fully empathize. They're not the responses that he's hoping for, but there have been responses. So he's going to get another one today. I'm going to send him an email with that map. And, unfortunately, that same code section that says that the district is precluded from doing any work on those private lateral lines.
Okay. That satisfies me. I guess the code is what the code is, and we have to live with the code. I think maybe the lesson to be learned here is every time someone asks me where the CSD's responsibility stops, I always say at the meter, because that's what I've always been led to believe. But in this case, that's not true. So we need to stop making, or I need to stop making that statement, because I learned something new today.
And this is, I think in most cases, and Travis, you can probably speak to this better than me, I think in most cases that just is logistically the way that it works out. I think just the way that the villages are configured, this happens to be one of those instances where there just is a private lateral line that comes off of the district's main line through a valve. And in that specific district code, exactly the way you just articulated, Director Janko, it says, behind the meter, but then there's another sentence right after that that says, in instances where there's a private lateral line, then it stops at the valve between the main and the private lateral line, and that's just the scenario that we happen to have over in the villages. I think that's the exception rather than the rule to the way things are configured out there, but that just happens to be the way it is over there at the villages.
The villages might be the only place where that happens.
That is correct. Every place else, you are correct. It's our responsibility to the meter, and it's the resident's responsibility after the meter.
Okay.
So,
got it.
So when you answer them, just say, well, where do you live?
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you.
Anything else to come before the committee? Comments, questions? No? Hearing none, we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Cammie.
Thank you. Thank you.